Because it matters. Access control systems play an important role in smart buildings. The benefits they provide to building users, as well as to the facility manager, are discussed in this episode. Let's explore the world of safe, secure, and seamless access solutions together with our host, Wilma Werner.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Because It Matters, the podcast where we open the doors to innovation, merge aesthetic with function, and security with elegance. On today's episode, where we talk about the navigating of the future of modern access control, I do have two guests on this episode, Felix Hurt and Dirk Schmidt. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hi, Wilma.
Hi. Please, gentlemen, introduce yourselves briefly. Why are you an expert on this topic?
Felix, you may want to go first.
Yeah, let me please start first. So thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Felix Hölt. I'm the business owner of Electronic Access Control. I'm 13 years now with dormakaba, and I have around 18 years experience in the building industry.
Thanks, Felix. So I'm Dirk Schmidt. I am leading the Impact Academy at dormakaba. I'm with dormakaba for more than 10 years now, and generally in the position where we train our customers, teach them methods, show them our products, bring them into the product experience, and show them how they can use them the best way.
And since the two of you are experts when it comes to access to buildings, do you observe yourselves when you enter a building, preferably one that you're not yet familiar with, that you have a special look on the locks over there and how the building is secured?
Well, yeah, I can tell you, like, when I'm on vacation with my wife, she always pulls me away from everything that I'm looking at, whether that's sliding doors, door closers, then you get your hotel key cards and you look at who's the provider and you look at your hotel room lock, and it's terrible. You can't turn away from it.
Yeah, I feel the same. So usually when I'm away and I'm in a hotel or something like that, and I first check for sure who's the provider of the plastic card and the hotel locks. Yeah, that is, I think that is in almost the same like the exit.
Well, you probably can't get away from that. And without naming any companies, of course, but have you ever felt like, I would prefer a different company?
No, you know what the funny thing is to me is when you're in those hotels where you still get these old-fashioned mechanical keys and a boat anchor hanging on it, and then you got to carry that thing around all day. That's rather a disappointment, but no, really, I think it's good to have competition. I think it's also good for us to sometimes see, now we could probably do better, or sometimes you might even take some good ideas away from it.
Oh, do you remember those? Oh, I was about to say ancient, but those keys that they used to have at the fuel stations, tiny key with a huge key hanger just to ensure that people don't accidentally take it. That's the image that I have in mind when you talk about that.
Totally.
Okay, gentlemen, and assuming or imagine we were not coming together because of professional expertise, but private life expertise, what would probably be the topic that we would call you for because you are an expert in that area?
Yeah, no, for me, it's definitely, I am also a certified audio engineer and a musician, so I look at things like from different angles. Here also the interesting thing is the more I got professionally into my what I do in my daily job life now is also influencing the way how I work in the music industry. So like, how are those cases locked and where do we lock them and how can we make sure that everyone has the keys to the right things and stuff? So it's interesting, you know, it kind of invades my private life working with dormakaba and working on access solution things.
Quite emerge. I recently attended a concert of Thomas D, one of the four, the Fantastic Four.
I love the guy.
Are you able to attend a concert and just enjoy the music?
Hell no. If you're an audio engineer, there's no way. You're always like, oh, the singer is too quiet. Oh, the drums are punching too hard. Oh, there's too much compression on the main
PA. Let me take over.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you can't, you know.
You can. Felix, what about you?
Yeah. So to be honest, so I in my private life, I only take care of my family. I do a lot of sports on the weekend. That is something that I really enjoy to get some. Sorry for that, but I don't have that interesting hobbies like Dirk has.
Do not apologize. Your family is very thankful to hear that. We will show you this episode, and they will love hearing that. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
A brief introduction to modern access control systems.
Okay, gentlemen, since you are our today's expert on this episode, where we talk about modern access control systems, and this topic even follows you in your private life, what would you say, what are the main differences between traditional and modern access control systems?
I believe by saying a traditional access control solution, you mean the kind of mechanical locking system. So I can imagine most of us are usually using still mechanical keys on a daily basis, because I think that is still the easiest choice for most of the applications. But I think that especially the security of a mechanical locking system is very limited. Imagine you are losing the master key to your company and someone would have immediately access to all the doors, and you would probably have to exchange many locks to secure your company again. So, I mean, that is not quite state of the art. To be honest, not even talking about the effort of to manage all those mechanical keys. So you always have to know who is having the mechanical key, and that keys have handed out properly and are returned properly. Otherwise, you're also creating a security gap. And I think that is the most reason why electronic access control solutions have been invented and improved over the past few years. So modern electronic access solutions are combining different electronic keys like RFID plastic cards, key fobs, mobile phone, biometric authentication, in order to ensure that only the person that is owning the key is also using the key. And as the administrator of the access control solution, you can easily create new keys, you can manage who has access to when and to which door, and you also get a feedback when a key was used. I think that is the most difference to modern, to traditional electronic access, to traditional access control solutions.
Yeah, and I fully agree, Felix, but also I often see it from a perspective of how these new possibilities invade our digital footprints and our digital life. So to me, it's also a lot about getting a different level of comfort handling those things. Opening a door with a smartphone is a whole new approach. It's a whole new experience. But in addition, I think very important is the workflows, how organizations work today. An example, that's where traditional and modern systems give you very, very different options, such as when you have an HR department managing people moving from one factory to another, you can simply, with an electronic system, have their access controls being transferred. So with the click of an HR person taking you to another department, already your access rights will also be going with that click in your HR system. So to me, it's a lot about comfort, easier management, but also workflows that you can associate with your access strategy.
Mm-hmm. When you just mentioned companies and the HR department, I was thinking of huge, huge modern smart buildings. What would you say, what role do these access control systems play right now, and how common are these?
Well, here we have to differentiate a lot between what countries you are looking at as an example. Just to give you an example, we have a very huge Chinese trading company. Not sure if I might say the name.
Without naming anyone.
But they have a completely biometric controlled key-free, card-free entrance system, which is possible as an example in the Chinese world. In the European world, due to data regulations and such things, you wouldn't be able to do these things. So here, it always depends a little bit what you're looking at. The biggest challenge, what are you actually allowed to do? By law, by definition, with regulations, that is the big challenge.
And do the company that we do not name right now, do they use fingerprints or iris scans?
They use face recognition everywhere, from your cantina where you withdraw your food until where you enter the premises, when you leave the premises, when you rent a bicycle on the premises, everything's done with face recognition.
Okay, that wouldn't be possible in Europe due to data security.
Data security and regulations. In Germany, our German officer for web security would freak out.
But I think it's still a trend. So especially when we're talking about smart buildings, I mean, smart always means to learn something out of the history or out of data. And that is exactly, I think that is a huge trend, especially also in our industry, because buildings today, they are an office building is no longer simply just an office building. It has offices, but you might also have restaurants, shops, residential floors, hospitality, and so on. And this is currently changing. So all the data that the building is somehow creating, this can be learned to efficiently use a building. And that is exactly what I see as a trend. And therefore, the data can be used. And that's why we're then talking also about smart buildings, because the building itself is learning how it is being used, how many people are attending or are present in the office. And that is all this information is very, very valuable for really having an efficient operation of a building.
To add to Felix's idea, one of the challenges I have personally experienced, and that was really interesting to see, is another company that we work with, which is in Korea, when they change shifts from the morning to the afternoon shift, 25,000 people enter the factory and 25,000 people leave the factory at the same time. That's also something that needs quite some intelligence to manage.
I can't imagine. I can imagine that.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw a company with a 3-lane highway going into the factory.
Yeah, and 50,000 people moving at the same time, besides football
yes.
stadiums, by the way.
That's crazy.
And besides the aspect of data security, what further worries or disadvantages do you face or do you have to argument for when it comes to using biometric systems?
Well, it's of course all the givens that we have by legislation. There is laws in certain countries that would not, in example, allow you to put a real recording camera into a public space. So those are limitations. Then the big old question is always, where do you manage and store the data? So where are the servers located? Are they within the country? Are they elsewhere? Which to us is a challenge because, of course, we also have the tendency to go into cloud systems where you can do things remotely, manage them on a global base. So this is one of the, I think, very big challenges we have today, data management. Then a little bit thinking about blockchain, where is the data going? What's it utilized for? Who's in charge of data management? So-called housekeeping of your data. I think this probably right now is the biggest challenge preventing us from moving faster into those biometric face recognition, iris recognition things.
Yeah, I fully agree what you said, Dirk. I think especially when it comes to data security, that is something that is tied to some national rules and to some national regulations. And that's why it is really difficult to have global products here and to have global solutions. And that's why we need to be absolutely careful with what is happening with the data that is being collected in a building or even with an access control solution. And that is something that we need to find really local solutions in dedicated countries, and especially when we're talking about cloud technologies, this is nothing that we can prevent. Sometimes it is very difficult to prevent cloud technology to be limited to national geographics here.
And you already mentioned quite a few technologies. We will have a look into the future in the next chapter.
The transformative power of mobile access technologies.
Gentlemen, there are people who call the power of mobile access technologies transformative. Felix, what do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Mobile access is having a clear advantage. So you don't have to hand over keys physically. So you can simply send a key to another person as easy as sending a message. So, and as soon as the handing over process to another person is time consuming or causing costs, this technology is truly a game changer. For instance, a hotel usually having a kind of 24/7 reception desk for check-in. And exactly with mobile access, this can be done automatically. Or other typical applications would be universities with several thousand students changing every year, or utility customers that are having or to hand over keys to service technicians. So that is also a clear use case where this technology truly is a game changer, in my opinion.
Hmm. And I may add, and maybe a little bit on the why is it not maybe as transformative as some people think. First and foremost, if you consider yourself being in an organization on a higher security level, we all know those smart badges that we have, and typically they're tied to our belts or somewhere else. So here, sometimes the question is, will it add to the comfort or will it add to the complexity of you doing your daily routines? That being said, it's of course a little quicker to grab that badge and hold it in front of a reader than it is to get your phone maybe out of your jacket, out of your pocket, then present it to the reader. Sometimes, not Tomacaba, but other companies, you then need to open an app, you need to press a button, you have to do certain routines and things, which may not be as quick and comfortable. But I totally agree to what Felix said. The deployment of keys and how you can revoke keys and manage access rights in an organization in real time is probably the biggest benefit that I see today when it comes to mobile access technology.
So if you weigh the advantages against the disadvantages, the two of you agree that the advantages are way bigger.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, even in corporate environments, for sure, on a daily basis, most of the employees are still using the badge. But as soon as you're having some visitors coming to your company, then for sure, that also makes sense. No matter if that is an external employee or this is a guest, also there, you always have to have a kind of reception desk where you welcome the people, and that in future, you can simply automatically transmit or provide keys to guests, to visitors, and that is also optimizing your business processes in a very dramatic way here.
Plus all the employees who have forgotten their keys at home and need some help by the reception desk. I often observe that when I'm visiting companies.
Even if you take it to a private life situation where you're on vacation, you forgot to water your plants, and you want mom and dad to quickly go into your apartment and check after them, you can do this from the airport, just deploy them a key. Or also the reverse situation, you came home earlier from your vacation and mom and dad still have a key, you can revoke it as you're entering the apartment because you might not want to have them walking into a weird situation.
Yeah. I recently had that situation at a friend's apartment. She was on vacation, sabbatical for 6 weeks, and I needed to get something off of her apartment. And the organization that it took and the communication between her, a friend of hers, her parents, who are not even close to the city that we live in, that was a hassle.
Oh, yeah.
And you can even go one step further. You can even rent your own apartment. And in that case, mobile access is helping you quite a lot to welcome your guests and also to hand over the keys to the guests, even when you're several hundred kilometers away from your home. And that is a clear benefit of the mobile access technology.
Maybe I should suggest that to my landlord. Maybe he would be willing if he has some assistance from your side. Talking about the implementation, how does that work? So how does mobile access technology work and how is it implemented in practice?
I think in general, it's pretty straightforward. It's pretty simple. So you simply need your smartphone and the smartphone will be your key. You have to, for our applications, you need to download the Dormakaba mobile access app. That you have to register your mobile phone, and then you are ready to go to receive and store the keys, and that in a secure way. So you can also use your smartphone in addition, or you can also use some additional features in your smartphone, like the biometric face recognition, in order to make it even more secure, to even to have some biometric elements added to your keys as well. And to receive keys, simply the administrator of the solution, he is generating a new key for you, and you will receive it immediately over the air. I mean, that is almost everything. And as Dirk mentioned, so we are having within Dormakaba a new technology that is called, in some applications, that is called TapGo, and therefore it is, even the usage of the key is quite simple. You can simply hold your or present your smartphone in front of a card reader, and it works like a plastic card. So there is even a high convenience in using your smartphone as a key. And that, I mean, the usage of mobile access is straightforward. It's pretty easy for the user and also for the administrator. It's like almost as simple as using plastic cards.
And Felix, if I may add, I mean, one thing that we haven't looked at is, of course, you also need the matching hardware at your door. So just to give an example on the implementation, the simplest thing you could do is, if today you are working with a mechanical cylinder, you could exchange it to a digital cylinder. The exchange takes about 3 minutes. So old cylinder out, new cylinder in. You do the base programming with your smartphone app, and in 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, you're up and running.
Would I be able and allowed to do that with my apartment door? I'm asking for a friend.
Only with the permission of the landlord, because you're making an active change to the security system.
Could I switch it back when I move
out? Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I might have a topic to discuss with him this afternoon. So this sounds so good to be true. What challenges do exist when we implement these mobile access solutions? Because I do need some more information for my landlord, you know.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is you just mentioned one, since if you're in a rental situation or if it's an apartment complex, you typically have that shared main entrance door where everyone needs to go through, and then you have your personal apartment door. So just to mention one of those challenges is, it only makes sense if the main apartment door or the main building door plus your apartment doors are moving to that next step. Otherwise, you'll still need the key for the lower door and then the key for the upper door.
Got it.
Yeah, definitely. I think there are not that much challenges, to be honest.
It's not a big challenge. It's an organizational.
Unfortunately not.
Yeah.
Third level, third floor, no elevator.
Yeah, there you go. So there is a main door, and that's probably your little obstacle there. Unless everyone in the apartment complex agrees to go that direction.
Maybe I'll find some information to convince everyone in the house.
And I mean, a challenge, maybe a professional challenge, maybe to also mention one in that area is, we still, and the locksmith community is an aging community. If you ever have been to a locksmith convention, they are typically 50 plus, maybe even 60 plus, and sometimes convincing them to go away from their traditional key business into such a new technology where all of a sudden access rights have to be stored somewhere, have to be electronically managed, can sometimes be a challenge. Just to give you a funny example, when we introduced this for the first time in Italy and we had this huge locksmith convention coming together, and we introduced them mobile access, and the guy looked at me after my presentation and walked me out and said, "You know, my friend, in Italy, you're only the boss if you have the biggest keychain." So that was a takeaway that I found quite interesting. And he was like, "Look, if I got everything on my smartphone and I'm not the housekeeper guy with the huge keychain, I'm completely losing my position here.
Prestige and status."
Oh,
and
hell
the
yeah.
Obvious way. It's like having the closest parking lot to the entry door, and you take that status away from the person. Well, that is a cultural aspect to keep in mind.
That was funny, though. I mean, meanwhile, that has changed a little bit, but still, I've had a lot of those discussions. And of course, it's also sometimes a little bit the fear you need to change the way how you do your business. Before, and we had that discussion fairly often, it's like, but then if people lose keys, I don't get to make replacement keys, I'll lose that extra money, and so on and so forth. But what we have identified meanwhile, and that's probably true with every partner, is in most cases where you have issues, you don't have to drive to the client anymore. And that to them was an immediate like, okay, mostly I don't get paid for driving an hour to that installation and back. If I can do things from a remote location, that gets their attention immediately because that's unpaid time in most cases.
And from your experience, do your clients have this light bulb moment when you explain it to them, or do they need to have the pain first and then it's like you run into an open door?
Back to what I earlier said, they have this pain for 30, 40 years already. They know exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, good for you. I mean, there are numerous integrated access control systems like a Matrix Professional, Nexivo, the Card Reader. You name them all. How can companies and institutions or residential housing benefit from that?
I think that the huge advantage of electronic access control solutions is that they can easily be configured to the customer needs. So usually you have to manage different location, various tenants, visitors, you name it. So an electronic access control solution is very flexible when it comes to, it can easily be expanded. So no worries if a key gets lost, you can simply create a new one. With the benefit of mobile access technology, you can distribute them immediately. The keys that you're sending over are protected from being copied, and you can even add some biometric features. And that is the clear benefit, no matter if that is a residential building, if that is an commercial building, or even in a kind of university or whatever. That is the clear benefit of the solution. Yeah.
Yeah. And may I add, Felix, that we also have a couple of dedicated solutions for dedicated target groups. As you know, there is like people that are typically only in the Airbnb business. There is rental companies. There is this big shared office spaces. There is huge organizations. And of course, needs behind those things are completely different. So some of the solutions that we have out in the market are tailored to very, very specific parts of that community. Just to give you an example, Recivo is one system that we recently launched that addresses the private and home rental market with rental organizations. And of course, in the end, and Felix, you may laugh at that because you constantly hear me saying it, in the end, all of those solutions open and close a door, period. That's what they do. But what it does in the workflows and what it does behind that, like, oh, and we have to send an invoice to the person and so on and so forth. That is where the solutions differ a lot from each other's.
Yeah, exactly. It is really pretty much tailored to the workflow or the usage of the solution. So if you have a residential building, for instance, then the workflow itself is fully different. You usually have not having a kind of administrator in a residential environment. I think that is clear. But overall, as you said, at the end, we are always opening and closing the door. And that can be easily be done with your smartphone in future. And I think that is almost the same, no matter if that is home or your office or whatever.
Yeah. Well, just a funny number on the side, Wilma, just a funny number on the side is there is 120 parameters when it comes to go through a passage.
That's a lot.
From air pressure, the wind that's blowing against the door, to the humidity level, to how hot it is, to how many people at once, how many people in a day, what's the usage frequency. There is a lot to consider for a single door.
Yeah.
And in order for it to be easy of use, nevertheless, there needs to be a very good planning and designing system behind it.
Future-proof access control systems.
Now that Architects and planners do have to keep all this in mind, the usability, the interface, security, and everything, and it needs to feel like it's super low effort to use it. So what factors should architects and planners consider when they select an access control system?
I think that the fear factor number one is definitely norms, forms, and laws. I think those are the three main pain stakes that a planner has today. You can have the brightest vision of a beautiful door going into your glass interior space, and then you find out, oh no, there's that DIN norm that prevents me from using this material. There is this EN norm that prevents me from using this type of door, and so on and so forth. So I think even in the ideation phase of a building, you may have the greatest ideas, the greatest things like, oh, I want this beautiful rotating door in the entrance. And then you look at your possibilities. Oh, it's not barrier free. It doesn't fulfill this requirement. It doesn't fulfill this norm. I think that is the biggest challenge today.
Yeah, definitely. I think this whole smart building trend that adds a lot of complexity, especially to the architects. I mean, access control is only one element, but you also have to take care about an efficient heating, cooling, and everything all around that stuff. And I think that is quite a challenge for an architect. And that's also the reason why we are having some tools like the EntryWorks Planner, so that the architect can easily define the requirements of a door, and that not only the requirements of the door itself, but also the cabling, the wiring around. So that is always a mess, to be honest. I was some of our colleagues, he was taking a picture of an installation, and that was bad. It was quite a mess. There were around 20 cables all in gray with no label hanging around the door, and that has already been installed somewhere in a building, and then the installer, he then needs to find the right cable. I think that is truly a challenge. And this is something that can easily be managed with online solutions like the EntryWorks Planner. I mean, there you have the clear wiring plan, and the installer simply takes the plan out of the cloud, and then he knows exactly where to find the right cable, how to plug that in, how to switch on, or how to install the access control solution, even if there is not a detailed knowledge about what that finally does. And that is something that I think such tools, they are adding a quite huge benefit for architects, because they can't be experts in fire protection, in emergency exit, in access control, and everything around it. I mean, that is a huge complexity, and we are having tools in place to reduce that complexity, especially for the architects.
Yeah, and Felix, maybe if I may add one thing, and that is one thing we learned throughout huge projects and large projects in the past, is data management in the background. So from the first line that you draw as an architect to the final person starting to utilize that building, how often things got lost in translation. So you start with a plan, you have a solid idea, then it gets transferred to the electrical installer. He has maybe a little bit of different idea. It gets to the door planner. He has maybe a little bit of different idea. Onto the building owner that says, but I want this workflow, I want that. So I think in the past, this was adding a lot to the complexity where things got lost in translation. So with EntryWorks, the whole idea was consistent data from the first line you're drawing, from the ideation process, to really then handing over the final installation to the building owner. And I think that is where it makes a huge difference working in that ecosystem that we call EntryWorks today.
That's a huge, nearly a relief for all the different crafts working on a construction site, I can imagine. I mean, the bigger the construction site, the more people working there, the more complexity you have. And even in small construction sites, you have the different crafts that need to kind of go hand in hand. That's a huge level of complexity that is reduced.
And also, I mean, it helps a lot with the flow in the construction phase. And I can't say how often we had it that the electrical guy is showing up after the door guys are there. So you're there, you're putting up your equipment, you're installing the doors, but you don't have electrical power, and so on and so forth. Or, hey, wait a minute, I'm here with my door, but where's the hole in the wall? and this is also in the planning phase, a really important thing that you can also plan sequentially how the events have to happen then later.
Any further ideas that you think EntryWorks can help planners, architects, implementers, and the ones who need to keep the maintenance after that?
Well, to be honest, to me, the biggest advantage that I have experienced in a recent project that we are working on is, in the end, you need to define how that door is behaving in operation. How long will it stay open? How fast will it close? Who's allowed to walk through that door? And so on and so forth. In the past, it was super difficult to do the setup and the commissioning of such a door. So that being said, is you're coming from a complex installation with all the cables, the sensors, and everything you need to install around the door. But then you had to go into the next phase of doing the setup and commissioning that door for its functionality. Here, EntryWorks makes an enormous difference because you define those parameters along the designing phase and along the ideation phase. And then the installer has to do nothing but taking those definitions, taking his smartphones and loading them to that door. So that being said, is to give you an example, a complex door like a fire exit door in a bigger building, it would take you typically like an hour and a half to commission it, adjust the sensors, get everything up and working. In EntryWorks, you do the electrical setup, you install the cables, the sensors, you download the door's definition, and in 5 minutes, you're up and running. The interesting thing here is that we are creating a so-called digital twin in a cloud system where your physical door is constantly compared with the theoretical door in the cloud. And so we're constantly matching, is this the right thing? Does it have the right sensors? Is the right hardware installed? Is this the right door open or the right type of door? And that is really the enormous benefits also to the installers.
Yeah, I mean, that is the whole process from the very beginning until the building is really being used or operated. And maybe that hasn't been mentioned so far, but an additional advantage is because the architects, they are, when they define an emergency exit door, for instance, then for sure a huge building has several doors that have almost the same requirements. So they can use the same door template for several doors, and then it's pretty easy from the design phase down to the installation phase, because all the doors have using the same template within EntryWorks, and so also the installation of those doors is pretty similar and it is straightforward. It is pretty fast, pretty easy also for the installer, because he has to do always the same steps in order to install the door and to make it up and running.
And you have the technical requirements, the physical requirements, and I'm thinking of the regulatory requirements as well. How can EntryWorks support planners and architects to meet them?
Exactly. I'd like to mention with the door templates. So I think when it comes to the door templates, the architect can be sure that they are also meeting the regulatory requirements, because they are somehow standardized. There is a picture in the EntryWorks planner how everything is wired, how everything is working together. You get a part list of all the components that are needed in order to make the door compliant to the regulatory norms. And with that, the architect can be sure that what he is designing, that this also meets the compliance afterwards. And that is a huge benefit, I think, as also for the architect. I mean, that is always a challenge and that is always a risk when they are trying to add some features like fire protection, emergency exit. That is always a kind of risk to really meet the compliancy finally. And that is, with EntryWorks, pretty easy task.
So what Felix didn't mention, and I think that's making their life so much easier, is we use BIM modeling for pretty much every complex door that we're offering. So all they need to do is drag and drop that BIM object into their existing planning, and they can already see, does it fit in? Does it meet the requirements? So I think that is the biggest ease that they have.
I have another challenge for you. When it comes to the integration of access control systems with other building management systems, how does that work? You talked a lot about facilitation and how time effort is hugely reduced. How does that work with other building management systems?
So today there is a lot, there's a huge trend also in the building industry to have kind of ecosystems, to have harmonized APIs between different building systems, building solutions. And this is, yeah, somehow being standardized or being available, at least the solutions that are more or less running in the cloud, they are offering those standardized APIs so that they can be integrated into the overall building situation, into the building system. And so this is something where I would say that this is not only a trend, but it is clearly the future, because if, when we're talking about smart building, then all systems, cooling system, heating system, access control solution, fire protection solutions, everything needs to talk to deliver the data that the building really can get smart.
And just a fun fact that I may add at this point is, if you look at the entire cost of a building throughout its life cycle, so from you drawing the first line until it's teared down in probably 100 years from now, 80% of the cost of this building fall into operations. So this is really where it gets interesting. Like, are you heating efficiently? Are you cooling efficiently? Is your electricity efficiently? Is everything sort of green? Is it CO2 conform and compliant, and so on and so forth? So this is where the money for the investors and the owners really lies. 80% of the cost of a building going to operations. That includes the construction, the materials, everything.
So energy efficiency, huge, fantastic argument, a pro argument for these solutions. Thank you, gentlemen.
Future trends.
Dirk, you just mentioned the energy efficiency and how 80% of the energy is used in the operation of the doors. Can you tell us more about what do you think, how will sustainability and energy efficient solutions influence the future of access control?
Well, I do believe that a building, just like a human being, has an ecological footprint. And the better we manage that footprint, the better it, of course, is for the environment, the better it is for CO2 emissions, and so on and so forth. But where it really, I think, can make the biggest difference is at a very good level of comfort to use whatever energy you're applying to it the very best way. I think this is my future perspective of an ideal passage entrance into a building. Today, we still see in so many areas where doors of buildings in a hot country stay open 24/7 and they bring up the climate systems in those buildings like crazy, wasting energy. And I think there is still a lot that lies ahead. So that to me is maybe the most important thing, what we can achieve from our end to make that better.
Definitely. And also from architect perspective, I mean, the target for sure is to have a kind of green certification for the building. And that also means that everything that is being installed in that building needs to be very energy efficient and sustainable as well. So also even the materials that the products are using, they need to be somehow green, they need to be recyclable and also being eco-friendly. So this is something that is also a trend that we see in the whole industry, but that also affects for sure access control in future.
Yeah, but also it's the comfort aspect in some areas. And I love a phrase that I recently learned from one of our door sales representatives. He said, "Hey, have you ever watched a science fiction movie? Have you ever watched Star Trek? Have you ever watched something the like? Have you ever seen a swing door or a revolving door in one of those movies? Sliding doors is the way to go." So to me, that was a funny thing, you know, like, okay, where are we going to? And honestly, I agree, you know, I've never seen a science fiction movie where a door doesn't slide open. So maybe that's something to focus on.
I recently watched episode 1 to 6 from Star Wars. And yes, that's true. On every ship, even the Death Star, there are only sliding doors. That's true.
Yep.
We should install the sound as well. Maybe they would sell even better yeah. then. We could do that.
But honestly, that was funny, and I thought about it, and I was like, okay, yeah, you can go through every science fiction movie you got on mind. You'll never, ever see a swing or a revolving door. Never.
Yeah, that was in the Western movies. That's where you have swing doors, actually.
Yeah, the good old saloon swing doors and stuff. But then again, I mean, a standard door, we consider that a swing door, which where you have a door blade and a handle and you open it manually. I've never seen one in a future movie, so that might be a trend, something to think about.
I'm already looking forward as soon as the Star Trek doors are available, because then you simply have to walk through the door. The door will automatically identify you and it will open and close after you walk through. And I think that should be all the overall vision, the overall target for the future of having a smart door in future. But we are almost there, to be honest. So there's not that much missing today.
Yeah. Yeah, but Felix, not to destroy the illusion. You know that in the Star Trek movies, there were those two guys behind the scene that were opening and closing those doors manually.
Felix and Derek, if you have to decide, if you are rather Team Star Trek or Star Wars, what team are you in?
Ooh. I would say Team Star Trek.
And Dirk, what about you?
People always say you're so cuddly you could be Chewbacca, so there's my choice.
So we have both sides represented. Me personally, definitely Team Star Wars, which is why I'm more familiar with the Death Star than the Enterprise Bridge. But I think, yeah, both of them go with sliding doors. That's true. And now that we have had a look way far in the future. I was thinking when we talked about the sounds of sliding doors and the example that your colleague recently gave, and no matter what industry you talk to, AI is the topic. It could be exchange, it could be ETFs, financial, crafting, whatever. What do you say? What role do AI and machine learning play in the advancements of access control systems?
I think at the moment there are two major trends when it comes to AI. One trend is the data analysis. So AI always needs data to analyze data, to learn from data. And as I said, I mean, the biggest task that the AI has to do is to use a building efficiently, or to organize or operate a building efficiently. And for instance, you have, that was a quite interesting example some of my colleagues was telling me some days ago. For instance, imagine you have a kind of company and you're having a canteen for your employees. The AI could then help to analyze how many people are really working on site in order to order the right amount of meals in advance. So even with combined with the information, if there is a kind of amount of vegetarian meals, for instance, that is needed. And that is something where AI comes into place and can really help to operate buildings efficiently. And also, for sure, in the access control environment, it also helps to further learn to identify people. So in high security applications, it might be needed to really ensure that a key can only be used by the authorized person. And that is something that we are already seeing today by combining biometric and even health data. So AI is able to recognize further patterns. For instance, it could be measuring your heart rate, your blood pressure, your body temperature on a smartwatch. And this is guaranteeing that only you as a person are really using your key in order to enter a building. And that is something where also AI comes into place.
And I would also think of smart sensors as an example. I mean, today the challenge is, how fast do you want to walk through a door? Are you walking by the door? Do you want to really go into the door? So what we are currently working on is like sensors that detect your behavior. So how quickly do you walk through the door? How fast should it open? How fast can it close as you've been passing the door? In addition, there is also a lot of, for the Argus V60 as an example, learning scenarios. how often do people have a trolley with them? How often do they pass with children? So based on that intelligence and information, the sensors can adjust themselves to an optimum usage. And I think that's also something in the AI world that's very important to us, making a door smarter by recognizing what you're intending to do. And we had that example in bigger shopping malls. If you walk along the facade of the building, but you're not really intending to enter the mall, the doors would still go open. But how if you're walking by the building, the door would remain closed? Energy efficiency, perfect. But also users' comfort, because if at the same time you have a person leaving the building from the inside, you don't get those collision scenarios where people want to go in and out at the same time. The swing doors are falling into one or the other direction. So there's a lot that we could also achieve with AI.
I was just imagining myself approaching the door and probably the door would swing open into my direction. So I prefer that solution very much. Gentlemen, please tell us, what is the zero trust security model? And how can that be implemented in access control systems? Felix, you go first.
So the zero trust model is usually, as far as I know, used in the IT industry. So that is, it means that even if you are in a closed environment like a company network, you still have to authorize yourself with your name, with a username, password. So nobody is trusting you, even if you are using trusted hardware. So it is similar in access control. It is quite similar. You need to ensure that a key, or even if you are inside a building, that only an authorized person is using a key, and that this key is not being misused by another person. And transferred to electronic access control, that could be something additional a person knows, like a PIN code or a biometric element, like a fingerprint or face recognition. And that is something that could further improve the security in a company, for sure. Not simply believing that because somebody is having a plastic card or a key, that this is also the right person that is using the key.
Yeah, so for us, there is a big difference. We have two ways how we look at this. One is called identification, and the other method is called verification. So identification to us means you have a key, you have a card, you have whatever else. But verification to us would mean you have to apply an additional way of identifying yourself. Being a PIN code that you need to enter on a pad, be it a biometric picture, be it face recognition, be it something else that really makes clear to us that you're not using someone else's badge. This is really you using your personal credentials.
They will probably edit it from this episode, but I was thinking of movies where they chop people's fingers off to get their fingerprints. I hope this is not possible in the future. Sorry for that example. So no fingerprints.
No, it depends on your biometric device, actually. No fingerprints is good because we also have life scanners that really detect whether the presented body part is still alive or not.
That's an idea.
That technology exists already.
But the reason is not to, because you're chopping off the finger because somebody would use a 3D printed finger instead, and then you could have the possibility to enter the room even if he has your fingerprint.
Yeah, that sounds way easier. And that's really calming me down, reinsuring me. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, what do you think generally? What future developments? So technology that is already able to scan whether my finger is still alive or not, this is already reality. What future developments do you expect in the field of access control technologies?
I mean, today there is still a lot of progress regarding mobile access technology and also cloud-based access control solution. I think those are trends that are currently going on. But in addition to that, I see that this interface topic that we covered some minutes ago, that this is for sure a trend that will increase in the next few years dramatically, because smart buildings need to exchange information, needs to exchange data, and that also means that interfaces must be available so that the different solutions can really interconnect to each other. And that is one of the most important trends I see at the moment. And the other thing that also is getting more and more critical is cybersecurity, for sure. Because even you could have the best access control solution, as long as your IT is not secure, then you have the possibility of hackers getting access to your access control solution. And that is also a risk that, and also a trend in our industry, that you need to be pretty up to date with your access control solutions. When you're having an access control solutions, have it up to date and use the latest version, update your firmware and everything around that. So that is also a huge trend that I see at present and also in future.
Yeah, other trends I would also see, and I mean, there is things that corporations are working on, is to get rid entirely of whatever you call an access media, be it a smartphone, be it a badge, by analyzing the way you walk, by your features, by your face recognition, your heart rate, and so on and so forth. So there's a couple of things that are currently being looked at. There is already some security systems utilizing that technology. So basically, the system identifies, how is he walking? Is he pulling his leg a little bit on the left, on the right? Is that really him? So there's a lot of interesting things going on. And I can only add to Felix, I think when it really comes to making it even more comfortable in our digital lives, what we do, that to me is the future that we need to work on. And comfort to me means comfort with a high level of security. That maybe differentiates it there.
And to close an episode of, I love to ask my guests a hypothetical question. Gentlemen, a few moments ago, we've been talking about Star Trek and Star Wars, and Felix is Team Star Trek and Dirk is Team Star Wars. Felix, when you think of the Star Trek universe, what technology would you love to have on this planet, or maybe even in building installations?
I'm not sure if that is the right word, but I think it is teleportation. So it is, in German we are saying beaming, but beaming maybe means something different in English. That's why teleportation is maybe the right word here. So if we would have a teleporter, that would be great, in my opinion.
And Dirk, what technology would you love to borrow from the Star Wars universe?
Well, I tell you what, one of my most favorite sketches in the world is Eddie Izzard. It's called the Star Wars Canteen. And what I really would like to have is those food replicators. Where you just push a button, there's your perfect coffee. You push a button, there's your steak and fries. I would love that.
Cool.
But that's not Mos Eisley what you're talking about, is it?
No. It's Eddie Izzard. He's a comedian from the UK, and he has this funny episode where he describes how Darth Vader goes into the Star Wars canteen.
I know that one. Yeah, and then it doesn't work. Like, screw you.
Exactly. Hilarious. I'm going to kill you with that tray. It's wonderful.
Yeah, going to kill you. Yeah, that doesn't help him. What food would you replicate then?
Oh, I'm an Italian food guy. I love Italian food, so a wonderful lasagna, some nice spaghetti aglio e olio. There is a lot of things I can think of. Felix, how about you? Favorite foods?
Italian food. I agree. That is also my passion.
Passion.
I would say it is even my passion. Yeah, Italian food is my passion. Yes.
Yeah, I would join, and I would go for the wine.
Awesome.
Gentlemen, thank you for being my guest on this episode. I say thank you to Felix Holt.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us. My pleasure.
And I say thank you to Dirk Schmidt.
Hey, thank you, Wilma, for the fun talk. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And everyone listening, have a fantastic day and hear you in the next episode. Bye.
That was Because It Matters, a Dormakaba podcast. New episodes every month wherever you can listen to a podcast and on dormakaba.com.